One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm Frankie Oliver, your host and founder of New Society. And today I'm joined by PR Week's UK editor, John Harrington. Hi, John.
Hi, Frankie.
And our special guests, Katie DeCosa, director at CC Group, and Nicola Karonka, co-founder at Missive. Hello to you both. Thanks so much for joining us. So this week, we are discussing the findings of the annual Works Search Salary Survey. I managed to get that out in one, John. And what agencies can do to retain their employees, including rewards and benefits that both Missive and CC Group won awards for in this year's PR Week Best Places to Work Awards. So first of all, to you, Katie, what are your general observations of this year's salary survey that I think broadly showed an average 10% pay rise across the industry and an overall a dip in bonuses? What was your view?
It's a really interesting question. I think first read and face value, that seems okay and that seems fair. But I think then when you really think about how challenging this year has been, and notably the cost of living crisis, and specifically in October 2022, when inflation rose to 11.1%, which was a 41-year all-time high, perhaps that's not so good. So I think that would be my first observation around salary, that really against this backdrop, it's not so positive. And I think looking at bonuses and this dip that we've seen, it really, I think for me, tracks against probably the challenging scenario that in-house teams and agencies found themselves in towards the end of last year. And we know, you know, what's happened around job roles and redundancies and market challenges. We know that, you know, from an agency perspective, new business certainly started to slow down. So I think in terms of the way that the bonuses dipped, I think that probably all tracked and made sense to me. But I would also add there, I think the really concerning thing for me was the fact that chief executives within agencies fared best out of those communities and those teams. And
some
I think
punchy bonuses there, weren't there?
Really punchy bonuses. And I think, you know, my question would be, does this really feel fair, you know, against a cost of living crisis backdrop, which is definitely adversely affecting a certain group of people more than others? And those people are people within the lower end of the earning bracket.
So your view in terms of the 10% is possibly that it wasn't enough, also on the sort of backdrop of last year. I think the average growth rate of agencies was 15%. Mm. So you're feeling really in line with inflation, it wasn't high enough. And actually sort of consistency of some of the conversations that we've had with Danny over the last year is really how salaries were already potentially too low before we got into the cost of living crisis. So, Nicola, what were your views? Similar or different?
Yeah, I would say broadly similar. And I think you just touched on an interesting point there, which is, you know, historically, the PR industry has not fared as positively as broader marketing disciplines around salary. So I think it's positive to see that there's been some change. I think a lot of that's probably been pressure from the economy, and businesses and agencies and businesses have felt like they've had to move. I'm not surprised on bonuses. It has been a weaker economic environment, and I think whether you're agency side or businesses facing tighter budgets, a lot of organisations that reward bonuses on profit are going to find that challenging last year and possibly this year as well. I think, I don't know how CC Group does it, but I think if you looked across some of the best places to work candidates and Missive, you know, we reward bonus on personal performance as well as business performance. And that might be a bit more of an inclusive approach and start to challenge some of the things that you were talking about, Katie, in terms of, is this really fair?
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because actually, thinking back to the survey, I think it was something like 74% of people that were surveyed said that they were happy with their salary, and it was the highest number that had ever been recorded in the overall survey. So even though there's a cost of living crisis, generally, maybe on balance, people were weighing up what was happening out in the world and actually feeling this feels fair.
I think there might be a psychological thing about having a relatively big proportional pay rise, because I don't know about you, if I get a pay rise that's 10%, even if inflation is 15%, I'm going to think, wow, I've got 10% more money. Do you know what I mean? Maybe there is something,
it still
something
seems
in that
healthy.
That
yeah.
It seems better than it is. And we don't necessarily take into account rising costs as much as we should.
And that also might reflect the changes in the market, say from, say, 2 years ago to today, which is we've come from this very much employer-led market, talent market, where there was a huge amount of movement of people and demanding of higher salaries and agencies willing to kind of switch up and increase bands, to people feeling, yeah, perhaps a little bit more settled and comfortable with where they are.
And looking specifically, because obviously I think pulling out the cost of living crisis is very much around junior staff and entry-level account execs. What do you think is really the sort of overall average that you think we should be aiming at as an industry in terms of paying that level of graduate coming through?
So first and foremost, I think transparency is really important. So I think if everybody talked about it a bit more, then that would probably help that cohort out. Well, our entry-level salary is £26,000. We'd love it to be bigger, but we can't afford to do that at the moment. And I think that comes back to my point about the reputation of PR, what we can charge our clients for what we deliver. There's still work to be done there in terms of how we, you know, it falls into kind of the measurement debate, how we value ourselves and therefore pass some of these increased business costs that, you know, Missive is incurring and bearing. We gave everybody a discretionary cost of living pay rise out with their promotion.
There was mention of a lot of that actually in the
huge
survey.
Amount, which maybe is why people feel happy as well about their pay, because they feel like they've got this extra reward that comes out with their usual career development promotion and pay rise schemes.
Obviously, Evie wrote a piece about this recently, that one of the biggest trends to come out of the report is the continuing and eye-watering gender pay gap, where women in agencies and across the industry are being paid 24% less than men. Right, we'll take a minute to all take that in. But it is an ongoing issue that doesn't seem to be going away. What are we going to do about this? And, you know, really, what practices do we need to be put in place so that over the next couple of years we see this change? I mean, it's just outrageous.
I think it is outrageous. I think sort of seeing a female-dominated industry where men still very much hold the power in 2023 is really concerning, really, really concerning. And Nicola, you started to talk about it already, but I think transparency is something which just needs to happen more and more. And I feel personally excited about. So if we sort of think back to corporate legacies, whereby employees were not only discouraged from discussing their salaries, but quite often told that they were banned from doing so within company policies, which I'm pretty sure is illegal. You know, you have to think about why was that? It certainly wasn't to protect those people. It was to protect the companies from the disparity and the inequality that existed with the way people were paid. So I feel excited that companies like ours are being very transparent about the salaries that we pay to our employees, to the outside industry, and that you know, I'd like to see a future where conversations around salaries are normalised within businesses.
The transparency piece, could you explain that a little in terms of, can you actually see what every single person inside the agency is being paid?
So not to that level of detail, but we do publish our bands. So there are brackets, you know, if you are a JAE within an agency, a junior account exec, you will be paid from this to this. Same for account exec, same for account manager, and that goes up within the organisation right to director. And what that means is that we are objectively looking at individuals and making sure they are paid on the right sliding scale and they know what to expect. And yeah, just back to that normalization piece, if we can encourage people to talk more openly, then my hope for the future is that the culture will shift.
I'm going to guess that this is a bigger issue at the senior level than it is at the more junior level, and especially the issues around women having to take time out to have babies, less present, as it were, and potentially seeming like they're less value to the business. I think some of those trends are still going on. Would you agree, Nicola?
Absolutely. I tried to dig out some stats before I came here today because there were some brilliant stats around COVID and caring responsibilities in a household. And you had, you know, maybe households with two professional people. And if one of those was a woman, then more caring responsibilities fell to that individual during COVID when they were locked up at home with their families and children and maybe elderly relatives as well. And so this is not a problem that is just associated with PR and communications. This is a societal problem. And I think we talk a lot about, you know, things like maternity pay, flexible working, and some of the things that we can introduce and absolutely should be introducing to support women coming back into the workplace, perhaps after taking some of those breaks. But one of the things I think we don't talk enough about is supporting men as well. And so supporting men in caring roles and for organisations to become more compassionate for the role that fathers need to play in families and enable them to do that with pride so that women are able to share some of those responsibilities and that load. Because, you know, to your point at the beginning, the thing that's galling about this stat, whilst it's an issue that affects multiple industries, not just PR, we're in an industry where more women work in PR. So the fact that we just can't get women up to senior positions is just lunacy.
I think it was more of a trend, much more of a trend inside agencies than it was in-house, actually. I think it was a marked difference. And, you know, that there can be a real issue, and that's something that we touched on with last International Women's Day podcast that we did. Just that sense, really, that when women have to step back and go on maternity leave and so forth, that men have many more opportunities to be more commercially successful inside an agency in a way that possibly an in-house person isn't being measured in the same way. And possibly that's where some of these issues lie.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think just, I mean, I love your point there, Nicola. And I think we, you know, we need to talk about this more, this point about women and unpaid care work, because globally, you're right, it's a societal issue. And there's this global assumption that women should hold responsibility for this unpaid care work. And thinking about some of that data, on average, women conduct 3 to 6 hours unpaid care work per day, whereas men take on 30 minutes to 2 hours. And I have to say, even in the most progressive of households, I do see that play out. So you're absolutely right. And also, our policy should always be family friendly and not just focus on the women, of course. You made that point about in-house, and it's a really interesting point, I think. And I've certainly felt this throughout my career as I've worked on both sides of the fence. I've absolutely lived with a perception that it's an easier ride internally and therefore it's probably more family friendly. There's more flexibility.
I think it depends on the organisation and your role, but definitely, I mean, we've all had the clients that say, close of play is 5 o'clock, right? And we're like, close of play is midnight. But you definitely know that there's a different working pattern and people are in those offices at that particular time. And I suppose it then leads into also the research that showed something like 64% of women would prefer to work in-house versus, you know, 45% of men. And, you know, I've got so many anecdotal stories of women in their, you know, 30s, 40s who are now mothers who find that there is a much better culture in-house, a much more adult-led culture that supports them better than agency life.
I think that's fair, but I do like to think that agencies like ours are really bucking that trend.
I don't think every in-house position in every agency is the same, right? So that's fantastic to hear. And I think when you've got female leadership leading an agency and really ensuring that it's shifting to a well-being culture, you know, and not being the agency of the 90s is definitely the way forward. That means that you'll retain those staff and therefore the benefits that come with that.
It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder, you know, to what extent it's actually true that conditions generally are you know, better in-house if you're gonna work in-house rather than agency, and how much there is just too many variables to make that broad assumption. I mean, I don't really know the answer to it.
I do. I mean, from everything that I've been told with very close colleagues that have gone in-house, I would say it's definitely easier and better. And I think a more respected position. I think being an agency, it's not every agency, you can't sweep in generalisation, but I think it's really, really hard. I think some of the stuff that I hear is fed back to me is also just being much more trusted in a position where you're much more integral to the business and the decisions it's making, rather than just feeling like the sort of lapdog that's trying to constantly chase the possibility of, you know, working together or delivering the next campaign. And I think that as you get older, I wonder if that also potentially becomes a more rewarding situation. Whereas I think possibly being more junior inside agencies might have more benefits versus being in an in-house position.
Perhaps broadly, but yeah.
I mean, you started in-house, actually, your first job.
I did start in-house. But I do think, the thing about in-house is it does come with its challenges as well, because you might not have, you know, 4 to 6 clients, but you've got stakeholders internally, and it's difficult. And often, you know, you're proving your worth, you're proving that ROI, and it can be kind of a lonely game. I think broadly those assumptions are right, and I can see why that data shows that, particularly from women, there's an appetite to move in house.
I would just add, at Missive, we work predominantly with technology companies, and I think that perception of it being slightly easier is probably true for the larger corporate blue chips, where they've got established policies, an HR person. For some of our tech startups or VC backed businesses, I think the marketing communications PR role ends up being in more of an agency vein, where there's not quite so much respect for the contribution that they make. They might not have a seat at that strategic table. I think they're expected to work incredibly long hours. You know, these are technology companies that demand a lot. So I do think maybe it varies across size of organisation as well.
Most PR agencies in the UK are SMEs. We can kind of forget that, can't we? Mm. You know, these relatively small companies in this industry. I mean, the biggest organization in our sector that's a consultancy is a £100 million turnover, and that's the very, very biggest, and obviously the vast majority are nowhere near that. So yeah, it does make you think.
I mean, I've got friends in in-house positions, very senior in-house positions, where sometimes I feel like they don't see the light of day. And, you know, going through COVID and the cost of living crisis and the demands on an in-house, you know, lead has been absolutely massive. But I think that sort of overall, how is it for the rest of the team? I generally think there's a definite trend of a slightly different working culture and slightly different expectations. And I think it's just also the commercial weight of numbers that are on every agency head. Every agency employee can feel that, right? Versus a very different set, as you say, expectations around stakeholders and that kind of management style that's now needed in-house.
Okay, so the report also showed that hybrid working is here to stay, with most agencies operating a 2 to 3 day at home / office working pattern. What is the hybrid working policy that you both have? And what do you see as being the biggest benefits? And I guess from that, how do you mitigate against the potential drawbacks, really?
So at Missive, we've always had a hybrid working policy, and it's truly hybrid. We don't mandate any days in the office. We've always referred to it as our tell, don't ask policy, so that people are communicating with their teams about what they're going to be doing, where they are. The massive benefit is trust. So we've built a huge trust culture within the business. And latterly, I think, as people have taken advantage of it more, because I think pre-COVID, what that meant to people was coming in 4 days a week and working at home one, even though we gave them the option. Today, it is probably more like a 2 or 3 days in the office. But it's always at their discretion. And what that's driving for us is a much more diverse workforce. So, Yeah, in terms of people with caring responsibilities, that can be really beneficial. But beyond that as well, that we've got good examples of people who have made sort of neurodiverse disclosures to us and who find really busy environments difficult. So commuting in the rush hour is really problematic for them. Back to the cost of living crisis, some of our team avoid rush hour so they don't have to pay so much on their travel expenses. So I think the diversity that it enables in our team has been such a massive win. Admittedly, it's a more challenging business to run hybrid because you don't have everybody there all the time ready to talk to at the first instance that you want to share information with. We've done things like we signpost Thriving Thursdays to bring people into the office, encourage them with breakfasts, training events, social activities that we signal around particular days to encourage people in. And then the other thing we've done is invest in collaborative technologies so that hybrid really works. You know, we make every meeting hybrid if it's in person as well as dialing people in. We're very, very inclusive, right down to everybody having their own £500 technology budget so they can set themselves up at home for success. So it does require a bit more setup and a bit more thoughtful working from the team in terms of that inclusivity, but the benefits definitely outweigh those challenges.
Great. And Katie, what's CC Group's approach to hybrid?
Similarly, really. So, you know, we've taken that approach of really empowering and trusting our team to work wherever they want to be. And really, you know, to your point, Nick, acknowledging that everybody's individual needs are entirely different. You know, we have some people who want to come in somewhere between 3 and 5 days a week and work from the office, but we have some people who want to come in once a month or once every 2 months. There are always very personal reasons for that. Some people work outside of London, so that's opened up our talent market, which has been a real benefit. Some people are parents. The neurodiversity issue has come up as well. And we want to support and accommodate the personal needs of our staff as best as possible. So it's what we call radical flexibility. So as well as the radical flexibility policy, we do encourage people into the office for certain touch points. So we do mandate our quarterly kickoff to make sure that people can join that and the social event afterwards. Our two major socials a year, so summer and Christmas. And then we have lots of opportunities for collaboration in between. So in-person training and also various inclusive social events from book clubs to cooking sessions.
So I think one of the biggest challenges that some other agency heads have been talking about, and thinking about Graham Goodkind here, a Frank who recently put a post out on LinkedIn, was concerns around what the new hybrid working pattern really meant for junior people. What that meant for sort of not being there in the corridor to be able to pick up on certain things, be part of the team experience, probably when you're doing a big sell-in. I also remember the agencies that I've tried to pioneer flexible working in long before we had COVID, and some of the pushback that I had from other senior members of the team was, oh my goodness, what happens if the team aren't there to send out that cuttings email by, you know, 9:15 in the morning, and everything will die and fall apart. So how are you, and also I suppose there's also the pastoral care that actually it's easier when you're sitting next to somebody.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Isn't it? It is easier to help mentor and guide and coach, and also pick up on when somebody's maybe not okay, I think is also a really important part of that. Nicola, how are you managing that? Are there any new practices that you've brought in to help support junior members of the team?
Yeah, so I think there is a little danger and watch out in it's quite an easy conclusion to come to that some of these challenges exist. And then, I would challenge back to say, how is that impacting on the business and the individuals you are hiring? You know, what's their response? So we have an employee survey where we ask everybody what they want, what and how they feel about hybrid and what their needs are. We have a shadow board that we get feedback from, you know, perhaps more junior people in the business that don't sit at the senior leadership team table. So constant feedback and trying to listen to the junior team and hear what their needs are on the ground, I think is really important. And in terms of what that means in practice, actually, we experience that the junior team are the ones that come in a lot. They're the ones that are there. It's the senior team who perhaps live a bit further out from London, maybe have additional responsibilities outside of the work that we talked about that are perhaps there a little bit less. So I do sort of challenge that stereotype a little bit around being present and being there. A lot of our junior team, in my experience anyway, are in the office and ready to learn.
And do you always ensure that a senior person is in to look after the junior team when they're there effectively?
It's a really great question. And it is a conversation that we have a lot in terms of actually, you know, we really need to be there for them and we need to be spotting those signs. And I think when you have a culture that exists, such as in, I'm sure, in CC Group and in Missive, we're compassion led. So people join our business because they care about the group and they care about the team. So it comes reasonably naturally that people would look out for each other and find, make sure that everybody is okay. And we have lots of mechanisms for people to feed up and down. But yeah, we do make sure that the senior team are visible and are around.
I think that's interesting, isn't it? When you say you've got the mechanisms, I think pre-COVID, maybe those things weren't there. And actually, once you've learned to manage a different kind of working pattern, you've put those processes in place, it should hopefully grease the wheels a bit more and make that situation work for everybody. What do you think, Katie, in terms of, you know, training staff, giving them the pastoral care that they need and just that experience that I think we all had of probably going into a PR agency where everybody was there 5 days a week and there was probably a glass of wine on the table at five, is a very different culture now.
Yeah, this was probably one of our biggest concerns as we came out of what was the kind of pandemic proper and moved into a kind of return to work was, we were working with a generation that had literally onboarded as their first job during a pandemic. So what were they missing out on? But I agree with you, Nick. I think we probably shouldn't get too hung up on it's changed, it's different, because a lot has changed and a lot is different. And to your point, it really is about having the right culture in place. So we have a mentorship program. Everybody within the business has a mentor. They are not only responsible for building out smart objectives to help that employee meet their next level of promotion, but equally they are responsible in terms of duty of care, checking in, making sure that that individual is okay. So having that compassionate culture whereby, you know, our people really are at the heart of everything really helps with that. And it enables us to kind of check in, understand when things aren't quite right, and actually ask for that face time when it's needed. On the training and development point, really, really important for us. We kind of increased our training and development budget. It was up in 2022, 43% from 2021. Similarly, the billable hours that we were allocating people, because it's all well and good putting them into training, but you've got to make sure that you're separating out that client work to enable them to do that really effectively and with the right headspace. So yeah, training and development's been really important as well.
So I'm also really fascinated about the experience for, you know, juniors, account execs and so forth. It's not easy being an account exec coming into a PR agency. You've got potentially four or five clients. There may be an average Tuesday morning where four senior people have asked you for something by 11 o'clock. And you literally don't know what to do. And, you know, there was the often who's crying in the toilets, you know, we need to pull them out and help them manage their workflow. And also the fact that I don't know as an industry how good we were also at training our account managers in line management skills and all of those sorts of things. Is that an issue that you found you've had to deal with and bring new processes in? Because I can think about that account exec that's literally sat there with now those requests coming in on email and what that might feel like.
Yeah, I think culturally there's a definite, a big movement away from the culture that perhaps you're alluding to, you know, 15, 20 years ago in agency life, where it was really about the results and the pace and the delivery and the expectation that you absolutely would love to go to the pub after work and network with your colleagues. And there wasn't really a question about whether you would attend that or not. I think things have changed a lot in terms of what people actually expect and demand and want from their workplace. They don't necessarily want that social experience in the same way. It's certainly not as alcohol led. And that comes back to the diversity point as well. But I think more than that, certainly in my experience, agency, we're a small business and we are teaching people about running a business at the same time as we are expecting them to run client programs and learn about PR. And that definitely comes back to line management training, diversity training, mental health training. You know, the expectations in terms of employee well-being don't just fall on Missive, they fall on everybody that has a responsibility for our team, which actually is a lot of people. So yeah, I think that has grown in terms of focus and prioritization.
Yeah, and the general sort of growing up of the industry, I think, in terms of managing people. Definitely. Rather than just throwing them in at the deep end and seeing who sinks or swims. So both Missive and CC Group won awards this year for your rewards and benefits program as part of the PR Week's Best Places to Work program, which is obviously fantastic. So well done and congratulations to you both. Casey, sort of first to you, what have you implemented? Can you give a flavour to us of the sorts of things that you've put in place as part of your rewards and benefits program?
Sure. We've done a lot. And I think the thing to remember when we think about this category in particular, that really attracting and retaining the best people in the industry is absolutely integral to an agency's success. So, you know, our people really are our most prized asset and we have to look after them. So, yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of what we've done this year, it's been, you know, everything from transforming our bonus structure, which saw us really democratise decision making.
And you have real transparency, don't you, around what actually will then deliver the bonus, rather than that sort of finger in the air sort of moment that I'm sure many agency bosses have chosen their bonuses around.
So absolutely.
That integrity around that transparency is really important.
Yeah, and we're really proud of that. So we have, for example, an all-staff bonus. So that's up to 5%. Annual bonus based on us meeting our fee targets. There's then an individual performance bonus. So that's up to 7% of salary. And we measure that through 360 degree appraisal feedback. So that shows that it's not just, you know, even the senior team that are making that decision. It's peers and people that report into the individual as well. There's a spot bonus scheme that we run for recognising exceptional effort. And then every quarterly kickoff, we have our famous five awards. So we recognise five colleagues who best represent our values. Again, nominated by teammates, and that's a £100 bonus for winning that. And then last but not least, we have long services bonus as well, which kick in at the 5, 10 and 15 year mark, as do our sabbaticals. So if you've been there for 5 years, it's 1 month, 10 years, it's 2 months, and then 15 years is 3 months.
So around that transparency, therefore, are you being very transparent about the numbers and reporting those back to your teams on a kind of monthly basis at monthly meetings?
At quarterly kickoffs, absolutely.
We do.
Yeah, we divulge it all. So we're very, very open and we make sure that, you know, everybody is on that journey and they understand where we're performing.
Yes, which is something I've always done, but it's surprising how many agencies still are not doing that, which completely shocks me and throws me every time. Nicola, looking at your reward and benefits program, could you give us a bit of a highlight of some of the things that are included?
Yeah, so our ambition is sort of centered around absolute parity. So we offer a rewards and benefits program that benefits everybody and really tries its best to cater to individual aspirations and needs. And we have a real breadth as well. And that comes back to the point that I made earlier around attracting a diverse workforce and recognizing that not everyone's motivated by the same thing. So I think in the last 12 months, we have found basic pay has been incredibly important, and people, new candidates and our existing team are demanding high levels of basic pay, which we've met because of the working conditions. But, you know, out with that, we try and make our rewards and benefits package really inclusive. So anything from ring fencing £1,000 annual training budget for everybody and encouraging every team member to get involved in how that's allocated and spent. I talked about our tech and wellbeing allowance that everybody gets, and we contribute to phone bills. We have equal maternity and paternity policies and extended family leave. We have unlimited bereavement leave. We invest in mental health training across the team and make that available to everybody, including health insurance and policies and stuff like that. The biggest rewards that we get cited from our team survey in terms of the most valued reward is actually our employee holiday, which we're going on later this month. It's an annual away trip where we don't do a big company presentation. We don't ask everybody to workshop our strategy. We literally just go for 3 days to spend time together and connect as a team. And I think maybe I should have mentioned it earlier in terms of ways to build a culture around hybrid.
I was thinking, like, last year you went to Mykonos and this year you're going to Mont Blanc, and I thought quite different holidays.
Is this where all of them begin with an M?
Yeah. That's right.
Yes, yeah. I remember this.
The Missive Massive. So we've run it since our inception and everybody loves it. We consistently get feedback that if we drop any benefit, it cannot be that. And, you know, the kit list just got published last week because we're going in 2 weeks. Everybody's really excited. And it's because we just invest in being together.
And how many days is it?
So this year we'll be flying out on Thursday morning and back on Saturday afternoon. It sort of depends on the location.
You're not going to shove everybody in a room, as you say, for half a day. And
yeah, so, I mean, we're going hiking. We're going on a guided hike. And, you know, we really think really carefully about what's inclusive. And, of course, we'll be enjoying a lovely dinner and drinks afterwards. But that won't, if you don't want to participate in that, that's not going to exclude you from enjoying the event.
I love that, Nicola. Feeling very inspired right now.
Yeah, you're going to go back and say, right, we need things beginning with C. Where are we going? Oh, we did talk about this, didn't we, John? Do you remember on the back of COVID, there was suddenly this rash of incredible away days where I saw Manifest and Milk and Honey. They're all going off to the most extraordinary locations. I don't think that happens in-house. I mean, that is the one thing about being in an agency, that kind of stuff happens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Not at Haymarket, though, is
not
it?
Not at Haymarket, no. I don't know where we'd go. So, going on to a very crucial topic, what is the standard in the agency now for maternity and paternity packages? And is it enough? Obviously, we spoke about gender equality earlier on and the pay gap, but this is obviously a crucial part of it. What are your thoughts on this?
First of all, I think it's really challenging as a small business because, you know, it's really hard to sometimes cushion some of that investment and give people the time off they absolutely deserve to spend at a life-changing moment in their own lives. We're about to increase our maternity and paternity and match the two from 12 to 18 weeks. And I think that's pretty decent. I don't actually think it's amazing and I wish we could do more. I think larger organisations can afford to do more and they should. And it should be an absolute priority for businesses because I think this is one of the big life moments that people experience in employment that can be really changing in terms of their next professional step. And workforces lose out when they lose people that become parents and they lose some of those people because they feel like they can't return. That loses value to the organisation, which is a real shame.
In an ideal world, what would you love it to be?
I would love it to be limitless. I'm so passionate about, you know, affording people that time and then enabling them to come back. I mean, one thing we have really invested in is returnship. So we give everybody a mentor from within the team who's experienced returning to work after becoming a parent. We give people a dedicated one-to-one coaching session that's specifically focused on how do you return after that life event and what does that feel like to you? So people go through that kind of training and development process to bring people back in. And we've so far successfully, everybody that's gone on maternity and paternity leave from Missive has returned really successfully into the business. So I'm really proud of that. There will always be more. My compassionate side of me will always want to do more, but we can't afford to do more right now, to put it bluntly.
I agree with you on that, Nicola. I think, we changed up our policy last year. So we looked at it and said, what's the absolute best we can do? We doubled our maternity package from 2 months full paid to 4 months full paid. We also announced a returnship program, which is really similar. So it's about making sure that people feel protected and supported during that return to the office. And really just acknowledging that it's a very hard transition. It's a very, very hard transition. And that question about, like, what should the gold standard be? For me, you know, I look to a future where it's 100% pay. But is it realistic at the moment? No, it's not. So I think the best we can do is continue to keep looking at what we can do within our means every year.
And over what period of time? 6 months, a year? I mean, what would be?
I think it's really personal. I've got three children, and the least time I had off with one of them was 6 months, and that felt pretty brutal. And that was doing shared parental leave, where my husband then took time off with our daughter. So it wasn't like we were sending her out of the household at that young age either. But I still, even as a parent, found that really challenging. So, but I think it's very, very personal. That was my experience.
Is it personal though? Because yes, if somebody wants to choose to come back earlier, fine. But I think the difficulty is that we're still not anywhere near the Scandinavian level of, you know, where there is an ideological belief that a child has their right to their parent. And that includes mums and dads. And how do we get to that position? And what do you think you need in support from potentially the government or from any other places as a small business to get to that position? I suppose at one point we just need an overall, this is the law. And I suppose there's shades of grey in between that. And I think ultimately it is still many mothers who are still suffering with that situation and also under supported by the childcare situation, right?
The difference with the Scandinavian approach is both government policy in terms of support for maternity pay from a government perspective, but also childcare. I mean, the percentage of take-home earnings that are being spent on childcare. And I know the government's introduced some improved policies, but you look behind the small print and a lot of those don't come until 2025. Now, I have a two-year-old at the moment. And he won't benefit from any of it. He'll be in school before some of these policies come in. So I think there's a lot more that the government can do. And I think a lot of businesses do a lot of really great things, and there are some other businesses that perhaps need to catch up. But yeah, I think from a public policy perspective, we need more support for parents.
100%.
Okay, final question then. What one thing have you implemented that you believe has made the most positive impact on your culture at the agency?
I think if I had to narrow it down to one, and it's not one because that doesn't build a culture, but if I did, one thing we haven't talked a lot about today is our entrepreneurial mindset at Missive and the extent to which we encourage our team to build and shape the business. So in reality, what that means is we've developed specialist roles for individuals who are pursuing maybe out with the traditional PR model of career. So we have a lead DE&I consultant now. We have someone leading Missive Studio, which is more of a creative brand concept. We've also funded more diverse career development in the business. So we have someone right now on an apprenticeship in data literacy, someone doing an online course in journalism in AI. We support our accountant with financial qualifications. So encouraging people in that way. And then our most recent effort around entrepreneurialism is Missive Sandbox, which is about working with the founders to ideate and come up with new ideas about our products and services, about our rewards and benefits, perhaps. Anything to do with the way that Missive grows, people can contribute ideas and help commercialise those ideas and bring them into fruition. The final thing that we do that really embodies all of this is we have an EMI scheme, which for big business milestones like our fifth birthday, we rewarded everybody in the team with share options in Missive.
So Nicola was a true PR and she knew how to get all of her key messages in there. She did brilliantly. It sounds like a fantastic set of benefits.
Lovely. And I think what I'd focus on for that question would be really, and it kind of ladders up to one of our core values, which is around support. So that would be how kind of integral support is to our culture. So looking after our staff, you know, for all of the work that we do around mental health, to making sure they're kind of protected in that transition and return to work as working parents, but particularly working mothers, to some of the D&I initiatives whereby we've actually thrown out our Christmas holiday between Christmas and New Year and replaced that with cultural days, which means that, you know, one of our employees that would actually prefer to work over Christmas but celebrate Eid or Diwali can then do that, not to the detriment of having to take further leave. And then just on that sort of supportive note and thinking about this year in particular, I think we're really proud of our cost of living support. So in October, we introduced a support package Which was a £500 payment for everyone earning under 45k or less, tax-free grocery vouchers for everyone earning 60k or less, but also the fact that, you know, our salaries were increased by 19% overall throughout the year, but actually 21% for CC groupies who were earning less than 70k. So just thinking about what the individual really, really need within our organisation. And then beyond that, financial support around cost of living. We had a fantastic financial resilience training session, which I'd really encourage anybody to get involved in, with a company called Wealthbright, where we were educated on personal finance. We got into some brilliant topics and issues like the pension gender gap. And also we all took a financial health survey as well. So there was just some practical support in terms of helping our people.
The amount that you're both doing as agencies sounds extraordinary. And I think it's just so exciting to hear how, you know, both your agencies are obviously exemplars of what's really changing inside the industry. And it kind of really reminds me of kind of what we're proud of in 20 years ago, having a duvet day. So definitely things have moved on. So listen, thank you so much to you both, Katie and Nicola, for joining us. And thank you to our listeners. Thank you so much for listening. We'll look forward to you joining us next time, when I believe we'll be looking forward to Danny's report from Cannes.
Absolutely.
Goodbye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.